Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan from the Purple Heart Open. We are halfway home today from the International Country Club in Fairfax, Virginia, getting the 12 o'clock hour started. It is time for your Beltway Blitz. We'll get to the Nationals in just a few minutes with Sam Fortier of the Washington Post. How should we feel about the 6-4 homestand that ended with a second straight loss yesterday? But let's start with the Redskins. Craig Hoffman is our beat reporter. Craig, what'd you make of Joe Theismann saying it would be, quote, a formula for disaster, end quote, to start Dwayne Haskins in week one for the Redskins?
I mean, I always feel weird going against a guy who played like Joe did, but I don't see it that way. It's, you know, if Trent Williams isn't back, then maybe revisit this a little bit. But, I mean, he's a quarterback who knows how to play the position to a level that got him drafted in the first round. So he should be ready to play, and maybe it's not the best thing for the team, but I don't think by playing immediately, even if it doesn't go well, that ruins his development in some way that is, you know, unable to be fixed over the long term. I think experience is ultimately the best teacher. So if he plays, yeah, it could be a disaster this year, but it doesn't mean that long term he's screwed forever.
Craig, I just think their weapons are inadequate to deal, have a rookie come in and have success right away or at any point this year. I know you're a bigger believer in Jordan Reed than I am, kind of having bounce back in Renaissance time, but let's say he's an average of what he was at his peak and then kind of what we've seen the last couple seasons. I don't trust any of their receivers. I don't think there's a safety blanket there. I really worry about that element of it to get some success to build on.
Yeah, no, and I'm not telling you that it would necessarily be good either, but to me, like, the crux of what Joe's saying is, to me, like, disaster is you ruin him. You do what the Texans did to David Carr, and that you take a guy that's talented that in the right situation could have been a good quarterback, and you just essentially ruin him forever because he gets hit a ton, his confidence gets down, all those kinds of things. And Dwayne doesn't seem to strike me as the kind of guy who, even if it didn't go well, that he would just be broken, that he would give up. I'm not saying that Carr gave up, but that he would be done forever. So while, yes, I do think that he would struggle because he's a rookie, if he was played, like, if he's the best option, he's the best option, and that's what they should do. And, you know, the reason he would be the best option is actually because he can make those guys better. If he can throw open because he's got a better arm and a little bit more creativity to what he does as a thrower, if he can throw some of those guys open, then maybe you actually get more out of mediocre talent than you do with a guy like Case Keenum, who is as good as the guys around him can be, as opposed to, you know, the quarterback elevating the weapon. So I think that's where I disagree, and that's where I see potential. But, you know, also, how bad is the bad? Like, if that's his good stuff, how bad is the, you know, the interceptions, the potential sacks, the turnovers that way, all those kinds of things? That's kind of the decision they have to make.
Craig, what's something about this team that you don't think people are talking about enough that could be an issue?
That could be an issue. I think their issues are pretty well documented. I think that, you know, if you go the other way, like, I think this defense could be good. If it's not, then, you know, maybe linebacker's not getting talked about enough, because that's where they now lack a dynamic playmaker. But that's in part due to injuries, because Reuben Foster goes down. And I think in the aftermath, there were so many other things that we talk about where it's like, okay, well, now who is the guy that's actually going to play? You know, what are they capable of? But I feel like that does get some attention. I feel like the safety stuff gets attention. Obviously, the weapons on offense have gotten enough attention. I actually think they're if there's one thing we're good about, it's identifying problems. I think that kind of stuff is well documented.
Craig, quickly, timeshare between Geis and Peterson. Do you think it's 50-50? Do you think it's 60-40? How's it going to go?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on the week. I think ultimately it balances out to be 60-40 Geist. Maybe it's closer to 50-50 depending on a couple of different factors. But Geist is going to be the starter. It's his job to lose. He's the guy they want to work. Adrian's there to back him up. But if Adrian gets hot on a given week, they could certainly ride him in any specific game as well.
Craig, thank you, buddy. Much appreciated.
You got it. See you guys.
Let's talk a little baseball. The Nats are 37-40, 8.5 back in the division, 3 back in the wild card. They did take 6 of 10 on their homestand. Sam Fortier chronicled it all for the Washington Post. He joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Sam, how should we feel? 6 out of 10, pretty good. 4 out of 6 in the division, even better. But they could have won each of those last two games, and Saturday was an utter debacle.
Right, I think you come out of that feeling okay. You would have felt better if they had won 7 out of 10, especially you figure Friday's game, 4-3 win, actually probably could have been a loss, but you figure both those games, Saturday and Sunday, both should have been wins. So I think, you know, you kind of take that for what it was, but definitely there was more left on the table, and even Nationals players afterwards, you know, Yan Gomes specifically said, you know, we know we can hang with this team. We probably should have won one more.
Sam, they released Trevor Rosenthal. For fans, it's about time. For players, I guess they're disappointed in that. I understand both perspectives there. But it's not as if who's waiting in the wings is just is being stymied and is excellent because they had to go to Rosenthal. There are not many great options. You saw that there on Saturday, as you touched on. If Rainey struggles, all of a sudden there aren't any good options until you get to Doolittle again. They're kind of back where they were, whether it's Ross or Grace or whomever. So who replaces him? What are the solutions? What are we thinking going forward?
Well, I think one of the reasons why Rosenthal was stuck along so long, like his presence alone should have showed you how desperate the Nationals are for someone to turn into what Rosenthal was, to have a third member back there with Tanner Rainey and Wander Suero to kind of build that bridge to Doolittle. If one of them is down, you need somebody to step in. And as of right now, there aren't any good candidates, like you said. I think we might see Kyle Barraclough step into that role. We've seen him before, of course, and I know Dave Martinez has said that, you know, looking at Barraclough, he's pitched, you know, near 70 innings or 70 appearances anyway the last two seasons. He might be a little tired. You know, if he's on the IL, he can come back. That's one option. You know, we might see a cast of characters cycle through, you know, from Harrisburg or Fresno. But I don't think that there is any really compelling option. I think that's one of the reasons why Trevor Rosenthal was there. So, yeah, in that sense, we are sort of back to square one with that.
This stretch coming up for them over the next dozen games becomes massive for different reasons than the one that they just encountered, which we said would define their season, and it defined it in a way that they're now back in the hunt. But they're playing some really bad teams before the break.
Absolutely. I think you have to take advantage, especially of Detroit and Miami. As we know, Miami is the team in the NL East you have to beat up on. They just swept the Phillies in 3 games in Philadelphia. So, I mean, you can see what losing to that team will do not only to morale, but your place in the standings. And I think the Nationals have to capitalize. They play the Marlins twice, actually, for the break, and then you get the Royals, who are one of the worst teams in baseball. So this stretch is really important, I think, in terms of they had a really bad first half of the first half. If you can have a really good second half of the first half and set yourself up going into the All-Star break, that could really do a lot for this team.
Austin, excuse me, goodness gracious.
Austin Voth is on the line.
Austin Voth is what I was going to ask about. Then I started calling you Austin, Sam. I got all for toots right there. Let me try this again. Okay, Ron Burgundy style. Austin Voth, is that a thing? Now we're doing, like, is this the rotating dance of the fifth star? You get one good outing, you get 3 weeks to stay in the job. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think as of right now, Dave Martinez is just going to ride the hot hand for the fifth starter. And right now, that's Austin Voth. I mean, you guys saw yesterday, he was touching 96, 95 consistently. That's up from 91.3 was his average last season. He attributed it to gaining muscle in off-season training. He also had 9 days off for this last start. But, you know, even beyond the velocity, he looked really good with location. He was hitting corners and, struck out Dansby Swanson and Ronald Acuna, the two kind of young studs for the Braves. So, I mean, he looks great yesterday. But then again, Eric Fetty looked great in his first start in the rotation about a month ago. So we'll see how long this lasts, and maybe he'll stick.
Sam, great work. Thank you so much, and hopefully you get a couple of days to rest and recuperate here after the lengthy homestand. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, for having me.
See you, buddy.
Read Sam Fortier in the Washington Post. Next, the Nats are 3 under .500 after their 2 losses. Could very well have been at .500 right now had their bullpen thrown better over the weekend, a reoccurring theme this year. But they're within three games of the playoffs. What needs to happen between now, late June, and a month from now, about a week ahead of the trade deadline, for you to feel like they should be buyers, not sellers? Let's delve into that on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Live from the International Country Club in Fairfax at the third annual Purple Heart Open. We're Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. The Nats played 10 games on their what should have been 11-game homestand because of a rainout. They swept the Phillies in three games. They split four games with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Probably could have and should have taken three out of four there because they got a great offensive day with Steven Strasburg on the hill, and he was uncharacteristically bad. And then they lost two out of three to the Braves. The second of the three games, the first of their losses, should have been a win. You play that game 10 times, you're up like they were, 3-0, 5-1, 8-4. You win that game 90% of the time, but they went to Trevor Rosenthal, no longer on the roster, and he walked the bases loaded before Tanner Rainey came in, walked in a run, and then gave up a bases-clearing three-run double to squander a four-run lead. They even took a lead after that 9-8.
That's right.
This offense is so resilient. They really do scratch and claw and battle until the final out, and I give them a lot of credit for that. But because they lost two to the Braves, who had been hot coming into the series, they just don't seem to lose. They're 8.5 back in the division. They didn't gain any ground in that regard. They're within three of the playoffs. Tale of two kind of storylines there. Everyone can celebrate the fact that they're three out of the wild card, and I think you should. It keeps them from being sellers, probably.
They're relevant, right?
It keeps us from having to talk about trading Max Scherzer.
We haven't had the manager get fired conversation
exactly.
In more than a month.
They're playing some of the best baseball in the sport, 18-9 over their last 27. But just know this, everybody in the National League, other than the Marlins, who they play a three-game series with starting tomorrow, and the San Francisco Giants, literally every one of the other 15 teams is within, I think, four games of the wild card. The Nats just happen to be one of those teams. They are still three under 500. Here's the question, though. What needs to happen for this team to feel good about not selling any pieces at the deadline? And this probably has to happen in the next 3.5 weeks. I actually was spending some time with Mike Rizzo at Nats Park in the last few days for a piece I wrote coming out in The Athletic tomorrow about know what it's like when he watches a game in his suite, and I watched a game from the GM suite. And one of the things he said is the meetings they're having every day right now are about whether or not they're going to buy or sell. What are they? And trying to figure out, his assistant GMs talking to other assistant GMs, him talking to other general managers and team presidents, what other teams are buying, what other teams are selling. In baseball right now, nobody really knows what they are yet. Unless you are a clear buyer atop the elite group, the Yankees, the Astros, those types.
Yeah, the Braves should be buying. The Cubs should be buying, right?
Everybody else is basically jumbled up into this middle ground where it's too early still, believe it or not. There's only one trade deadline, which is going to make, I think, for a more active trade deadline. But you're just not going to have that many sellers. So it's not going to be the buyer's market people want.
And also, by design, this second wild card situation where, as you mentioned, everybody – minus a couple teams.
Literally two teams.
Yeah, two teams in the National League, and I think it's three teams in the American League. Nah, maybe four because Toronto's out of it. But, I mean, Seattle knows they're not winning. So the point is
Toronto, Baltimore, Detroit, Seattle,
Kansas City.
So yeah. There's more.
So there's a few more in the American League. But the overwhelming majority of the sport has a chance. It's a lot like the NBA in that way. And you saw the folly of the Wizards chasing for that eighth playoff spot, right, and saw how it hamstrung them going forward and getting their rebuild going. But in baseball, because that second wild card is very reasonable, a lot of times 87 wins will get there. That doesn't mean you're that good. It means you've squeezed out a couple extra W's and mortgage a little bit to just kind of make that dance. I mean, it's entirely possible for a team to not be particularly good for the majority of the year and still end up, what'll be 10, 11 games over 500, to get yourself into the postseason.
There's a debate to be had as well, philosophically, just from a paradigm standpoint. should you go all in for a wild card spot? Meaning, there are two wild cards that are going to be won by upwards of, let's say, eight teams vying for them. So the math isn't good. Someone texted me last night, a Nats fan, and they said, better chance we win the division or the wild card. I said, look, I know they're 8.5 back in the division, but if I'm the Nats, I'm focusing on Atlanta. You still play them 14 more times.
Yes.
You've beaten them twice. Actually, you've beaten them three times after this
series. You're 3-2 overall.
3-2 for the season. And you should be at least 4-1. You can make the case maybe 5-0. You've played them really tough. But you play them 14 more times. If you can go at worst 8-6 against them, there's two games you've gained there. If you can go 9-5 against them, that's pretty impressive.
That's really
good.
There's
four games you've gained just like that. Now you're 4.5 back. You're in the conversation. The wild card to me, even though you're only 3 back, is actually a lot harder to see.
So many bodies to climb over.
I view it as musical chairs. There are two seats to sit in. There's eight people that want those seats. At least in the division, it's you, maybe the Phillies. We'll see if their free fall stops. I think they'll be around. Probably not the Mets, who are terrible, and certainly not the Marlins. So it's like three teams for essentially one spot. I like that math, 33% chance, a little bit better. But you can make the case, well, the wild card's not that big of a deal anyway because it's one game, it's a play-in, it's nine innings. Just get to the division series after you've now used a starter. That's not a great situation. But for the Nationals, for a lot of teams, I don't push all in to do that if you don't have the pitching, say, in a division series.
Mm-hmm.
If the Nats could just get into the playoffs, next thing you know, Max goes eight scoreless, you're up a game. Next thing you know, Strasburg goes seven innings, two runs, you're up two games potentially. To me, they should do everything that they can. Because of Scherzer's age, because of Strasburg now in his 30s, because Rendon's a free agent, because of the age of the ball club with guys like Dozier, if he's still here, Eaton. We can go around the horn with Anibal Sanchez and the contract status of a couple of these guys. This is win now time, so
yes,
you should absolutely do everything you can if you're in the thick of things to push for the wild card.
And now context matters, too. I think that's one point that's well seen. But another reason that you might say it's okay to add and give up some more, you know, horses from your system would be that, is this a team whose ceiling is still as high as anybody's in the sport? Like, for example, I think if you took, say, the Padres, who are just okay right now, right? The Padres, I don't know that they should necessarily be adding a whole bunch of pieces and forgoing their future to get all in to get to that wild card game.
Year ahead of schedule, first of probably a 4 or 5 year window that's about to open, and it may open next year, not this year.
And so, but the Nationals, you could argue that the reason they were in such a bad position was because of injury, a couple guys underperforming, but injury was the big deal. Once we get the full group healthy, we're as good as anybody. So, yeah, I want that group that's as good as anybody, whose ceiling is as high as anybody in the sport, to have a chance to bite the apple. You may not view a different team in that same light, if that makes sense. So I would probably argue that the Nationals, on paper, when healthy and right, I'm adding to that group, well, to say, let's see if we can get make some room in the postseason.
And we've seen this now over a month and change, and it's funny how this stretch of 27 games has completely changed the tune.
I know, of course.
Of what we were saying 5 weeks ago and people that were down in the Nationals were saying when they said this team was terrible. But this is where you are now. When you play the best baseball in the league other than the Dodgers for this long of a stretch, you've given yourself a chance to have these conversations, to get back in the thick of things. I believe that you're right. They're good enough now to try to add pieces if they're still playing like this a month from now. Now, here's what's coming up. They have a 12-game stretch against teams they should go 8-4 against at least.
Yes, the dregs.
Ideally, you go 9-3, and you've really accomplished something cool. But let's say 8-4, reasonable. They're major leaguers, too. They're getting paid. You go into the All-Star break at that point at right around 500, right? You will have gained on being three games under right now. If you can do that, you go 8-4, and you get into the break at 500 or a game above that. And at that point, let's say you're two back of the wild card, maybe you're six back in the division. I think you're in a really good spot to add a piece after the break in mid-July. But the question is, what do you need to see from the Nationals between now and then to feel comfortable about adding, not subtracting, about buying, not selling? If you're Mike Rizzo, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 is the number on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. And I would like to point out that Drabby just hit a ball, trying to chip it onto the green here on 17 or 18 in front of us. And it hit the cart path,
yep,
like on a line, on a ground ball. And it bounced off the cart path the most fortuitous bounce I've ever seen and went almost right to the flag.
And so Valdez, who's a golfer, stood up there and hit an actual chip shot. Drab hit a line drive base hit to center field that ricocheted off second base and still ended up in a good place.
They were both great shots, though.
Both really good shots.
Now Valdez's is about, 8 feet from the flag. Drabby's is about 16. Valdez got there by lifting a ball beautifully and letting it roll.
Like hitting the golf shot, Drab, who's terrible, and I'm not good either, but he's terrible, hit a skull
It kicked off
chopper.
The lip yeah. in front of him of the cart path because it was just a ground ball base hit to center. But it couldn't have bounced better. It was either going to go into the water or right to the flag.
Golf
was right
here.
To the
here's
flag.
Johnny Cake Solville, who's warming up here. He's looking at about a giant nubby shot. His practice swing looks terrible. He has no flexibility.
Cakes has such hurting swing.
His swing looks awkward.
Cakes like is wearing a purple polo. Well, that's not a bad little chipper.
That's a nice chip from Cakes. He's going to be pleased with that one, guys. Let's go up there. Catch the excitement.
Ball's rolling down toward the edge of the green. Now he's getting a little roll back toward the flag. And it's going to stick for Cakes about 12 feet from the flag.
He's downhill there. He's at an uphill putt, so he's got a good chance.
All right, let's give you one more. This is Pete Medhurst's approach. Pete's chipping. Nice little bounce for Pete, but it's rolling the wrong direction. This is going to be farther than Drabby's. This is going to be farther than Cakes's. This is onto the fringe toward the water.
It's onto the fringe.
Oh, boy.
That's where this sport
They're
going to
use Valdez's shot here, is what we're learning.
That's what you're
saying. If we're playing
probably.
Best ball.
Yes.
We're Grant and Danny. What do the Nats have to do to be buyers, not sellers? Have they done enough already for you to be ready to go get a reliever right now? Because I can promise you this bullpen will not get them to the playoffs.
No, it will not.
They need to add if they're going to do that. Have they done enough to be ready to add? You're listening to The Fan. The Nationals took 6 of 10 at home during their homestand, getting them within 8.5 in the division of Atlanta, as they've got 12 games to go before the All-Star break. All-Star game in Cleveland this year. Nats going to send Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Anthony Rendon. Anybody else definitively? That might be the list.
Maybe Doolittle if as rosters start to – there's some attrition, but I would doubt it.
That would be a stretch for your boy. I hope so. We could talk to him about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that might be tough. What if the Nats had a reliever make the All-Star game?
Ironic.
The way their bullpen is throwing. They're not good enough as currently constructed to make the playoffs. I don't think either Danny and I are advocating that. But what they've done by going 18-9 in these last 27 games, and give Davey Martinez some credit because suddenly Gabe Kapler's on the hot seat in Philadelphia, and
Callaway.
Maybe more importantly, Mickey Callaway might lose his job in New York with the Mets. Those two teams are spiraling out of control, and when the going got really bad for the Nationals, that didn't happen. You know, they were able to keep the morale high, and I think Martinez had a lot to do with that, but they have played well enough to just give themselves a chance to get themselves in the conversation. Here are kind of what you need to know now, and here are the numbers on the wild card. So they're 8.5 back of the Braves, as I mentioned. They're only 2 back of the Phillies for second place in the division. They were 4th a week ago. They've already jumped ahead of the Mets. And they've got a chance now to jump ahead of the Phillies in the next few days against the Marlins. The other teams in the thick of things in the wild card are obviously Philadelphia, a couple games ahead of them. The Mets are only a half game behind them. You have the Brewers, who are the current wild card team, with the Cardinals in the NL Central. Then the Rockies, who are ahead of Washington. The Diamondbacks, who are just a hair ahead of Washington. And the Padres, who are a half game ahead of Washington. It's a lot of teams you're vying with.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what needs to happen in the next few weeks for you to feel like they should be buyers at the deadline? 800-636-1067 is the number. To the phones we go. And we'll start off with Jim in Silver Spring. What's up, Jim?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. And also mentioned, Grant, that you've got the Braves going to Chicago for 3 against the Cubs. You've got the Mets going to Philly for 3. So
yeah.
I think it looks good for us to make the move here before the break. I just want to revisit one thing, and I just want you to – I don't know. We haven't talked about it enough. I haven't heard enough from you guys about this, and that is the management – of Trevor Rosenthal on his rehab. I really think we made a mistake giving him away. 100-mile-an-hour arms are a rare commodity in this game. The guy was a 45 saver, just 4 years ago.
Releasing now, him was a mistake?
Yes, absolutely. Because
what would you have done?
Unfortunately, I fully support Davey, but I was very upset that he threw Rosenthal in back-to-back when he is still rehabbing the way he is. He had a hole on Friday night,
They didn't have much of a choice, remember. They didn't have Wander Suero available. He was down because he had pitched three straight.
He threw to one batter.
They didn't have Javi Guerra.
A 30-pitch performance.
Grant, think if you open with Rainey in that situation,
okay,
how different that game would have turned out.
Right.
Think about that. And then you've got Rosenthal rested for yesterday. You know, I was really disappointed that management was not more sensitive to the fact the guy is rehabbing.
Well, he's not rehabbing. He's in the major leagues.
He had his full year of not playing.
He had a full month to rehab. Literally, you get 30 days to keep a guy in the minors. They kept him there for all 30. I've never seen that before. They gave him every chance possible.
I realize
they had to call him back. You've only got seven relievers.
I realize there are constraints on the number of slots that you have on the team, but a guy with that kind of a talent, I just think they could have worked him around.
My question. Let me ask you one more question. Yeah, what should they have done? You're talking about the usage in game. I can disagree with you on that. That's a minor detail. What should they have done other than release him? You can't send him to the minors. He does not have options. He'd have to agree to that, right? Otherwise, because of his contract, if he says, no, I'm not going back to the minors, you just have to keep him on your big league roster. Handcuffing him. So you keep him on your roster and waste a roster spot
Absolutely.
When you can't use him? Thanks for the call.
Categorically disagree.
No. You are in a playoff push. You have seven relief pitching spots. You already have situations where you're using guys 3 days in a row like Guerra and Suero that aren't available. So then you have these games where now I can't use Rosenthal because we're not up by five or down by five. There's no situation where it made sense to use him. Against the White Sox, they were up by five runs, and FP Santangelo on TV is saying they need to add some runs here to get a soft landing spot for Rosenthal. There's no such thing as a softer landing spot for a relief pitcher than five runs. If you can't pitch in that situation, you shouldn't be in the majors.
Unless you're a team that's not going anywhere. If you pitch for the Giants, keep trotting them out there. What are you going to do, lose?
But this is
a pennant race. This is a group that had – now, if they were the Dodgers and they were 30 games over 500 at this point, yeah, keep them on the roster. And you'll have plenty of wiggle room here. But you don't. You have a 19-31 stretch to start this season where you're out of wiggle room. I understand that 100 miles an hour – doesn't grow on trees, but Henry Rodriguez says hi. You know, there are plenty of guys that couldn't do it despite having some talent. And maybe it works out somewhere else. Nats fans shouldn't be questioning this fact. If Trevor Rosenthal emerges sometime this year or even next year and throws well, Nats fans shouldn't be doing the, we should have held on to him. It wasn't going to happen here, and you can't afford to wait around to see if it will.
A lot of Nats fans have issues with Rosenthal decisions. I think it's that he was here that long. You know, I think it's that he was allowed to ruin as many games as he did, including a critical game in the division.
Because it wasn't just games that he pitched in. It's games that you couldn't pitch him in, which forced other guys to do double duty.
Because you had him, you were playing one short. So now that's why Javi Guerra is not available because he threw in three straight. It's why Wander Suero had thrown in three straight. It's why Doolittle has to pitch so often into the eighth inning. It costs everyone around him the ability to be what they were supposed to have been, to pitch on their normal days. I disagree. Look, and the caller, it seems like to me, watches and is plugged in and he knows what he's talking about, so I'm not trying to poke fun. I just completely and categorically disagree. His point, though, was they can gain some ground before the break. 100% with him on that. They have the Marlins for three. They've got the Tigers for three. They play the Royals after that and the Marlins again, all before the All-Star break coming up in early July in Cleveland. Back to the phones we go. 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to hop in. What do the Nats have to do to become buyers at the deadline is what we're trying to talk about here. Ron is in Dumfries on line two. What's up, Ron?
Hey, Ron.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
What's up, man?
You got me?
Oh, yes.
I love the show. Grant, I tell you, I love your optimism. I really think if the Nationals were nine games out with 10 to go, you'd have a promo. Can the Nats make a run?
I'm not sure I would do that.
But I get the point.
I really do. And I remember last year you discounted the Braves. I'm a Braves fan. You discounted the Braves last year. And it seems to me you're doing it again. You know, the Braves can't hang on. You know, why would you think the Braves couldn't hang on?
I didn't say the Braves couldn't hang on. I've got the Braves winning the division. Did you listen last week? I told you the Braves are the best team in the division. Danny says it's the Phillies. I'm high on the Braves. I love the Braves.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, maybe I misheard. But earlier today you said that the Nationals lineup is better than the Braves.
Yeah, I'll take the Nats lineup over the Braves for sure.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know how you come to that conclusion.
Well, by watching the two teams play all season. Austin Riley's been great. He's added a lot to the lineup for Atlanta. I think he'll come back down to earth in the second half as adjustments are made. But the Nats have scored the most runs since they've gotten healthy. Other than, I think, maybe the Brewers or the Reds, I think they're second in the National League in runs scored. Since they got Soto off the disabled list, Rendon off the disabled list. So, yeah, I think if you take from when they got healthy to right now, I think they're the better lineup. I don't think it's close.
No, well, the first base, who would you take?
Oh, Freddie Freeman's probably the best hitter on either team.
And what about shortstop? You would take Trey Turner over Dabby Swanson?
Different player,
well,
but
yes, definitively, I would do that, and so would every general manager in baseball.
But I'm actually with you. I'd take the Braves lineup over the Nationals. I think when you have Ozzie Albies hitting eighth, you're doing something pretty darn good. But of late, the Nationals lineup has been good. But I think the point, and I appreciate the call, man. I think the point earlier was that the Braves right now are white hot. They're kicking everybody's butt.
Sure.
They're 14 games over 500. The point was they won't be that good for, you know, the next 85, 90 games. There's going to be moments where they, you know, have spells like they did to start the season. Same things as the Phillies had, the Nationals had, et cetera. They're going to be swoons, but right now they're playing great baseball. I mean, as good as Mike Soroka's been, he's not going to finish with a 2-1 ERA. I wouldn't wager, right?
No.
There are going to be hiccups here along the way. They're not unreachable in terms of the division. They are the best team in the division right now, though, and you saw that this weekend.
Yeah, they're not the Dodgers, right? They're not the Astros. They're not the Yankees. They're not going to run away, I think was the point. Now, if we're doing a topic where we ask who's the best team in the NL East, you would hear us praising the Atlanta Braves a little bit more. We're doing a topic, can they be caught? And I think that they can. And you're very high on Dansby Swanson, who's hitting the 230s the last 2 years. I am not. I will take Trey Turner over the former number one pick out of Vanderbilt, who's been pretty disappointing. Is hitting for power, though,
yeah,
this year. He's still not going to hit for a lot of average, but if you cash that in for some pop, hit some home runs, I think you'll probably take that if you're a Braves fan. Tom and Alexandria, you're on Grant and Danny. Nats, buyers at the deadline, what has to happen?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call, and it's an interesting topic. I was at all three games against the Phillies and all three games against the Braves, and that series against the Phillies was huge in terms of boosting confidence that we were able to sweep a team that's been competing with us. But watching the game on Saturday and to a lesser extent on Sunday, I think the fact that the team has been on a roll and been kind of on autopilot the last couple of weeks has kind of taken people off the idea that Dave Martinez is still a fundamental issue, and I think he is. I think the team has been performing really well. The difference over the last couple of weeks is that everybody's been hitting, the bullpen's been doing its job. I don't think anything about Davey's managing style has changed. And I think you saw that on Saturday night. He should have recognized that was, you know, as close to a playoff game as you can get to in June, and he should have seen with that first walk that Rosenthal didn't have it and should have yanked him right then and there. Instead, he let him load the bases.
Agreed.
And then bring Tanner Rainey into an impossible situation, and then Joe Ross just destroys any chance that we have of coming back. So
the Ross thing,
Dave
though,
Martinez,
thanks for the call.
Yeah,
I agree with you completely. Martinez left Rosenthal in too long and needed to manage that game like it was a playoff game, and he didn't. He needed to be aggressive in the seventh inning, and he wasn't. Ross in the eighth, again, we're faulting
no
him for
options,
who he's
man.
Using. They don't have anyone.
Yeah, no one's available there.
If Matt Grace was called on in the eighth and got knocked around, we'd have made fun of him for that too. That was the other guy you could have gone to. Is a soft toss and lefty who gets killed by right-handed bats. I just don't know that there was a good option. I completely agree with you on the seventh inning, and I agree nothing's changed with Davey Martinez's managing. But this to me is the example of, you know, earlier in the season he should be fired and everyone's killing him. Now they're playing really well, and it's not him doing anything right. I guess
right.
My point is it can't be one or the other.
Too much blame and too much credit.
Exactly. Early on, it wasn't his fault. Right now, he's not necessarily doing anything great while they're playing better. They're healthier. They've got better players. So maybe, if anything, it should just give us perspective on the fact that he wasn't the disaster that everyone was assuming he was at the beginning of the season. You could chime in if you'd like at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. The trade deadline is about 5 weeks away. Trying to figure out what would have to happen for the Nats to make the decision that they're going to add some reinforcements rather than selling off some pieces with some expiring deals coming up at year's end. Also, in the NBA, they're getting rid of the term owner. They don't want owners called owners. We will discuss on The Fan. Team owner, not a term they'll be using in the NBA anymore. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. Happy to have you alongside. End of this segment, we will be giving away Nationals tickets today at 12:55. 7 minutes from right now. Got to be able to answer a question. If you can do that, you can go see the Nats, who are playing better ball and back in the playoff chase when they return to D.C. after the road trip that gets started tomorrow night in Miami. Adam Silver's the commissioner of the National Basketball Association. He was talking about the term owner, which the league's been trying to get rid of for a while, and apparently it's official. They want to no longer have owners referred to as that. Here's what he had to say on TMZ.
I don't want to overreact to the term because, as I said earlier, people end up twisting themselves into knots, avoiding the use of the word owner. Yeah. But we moved away from that term years ago with the league. We call our team owners the governor of the team and alternate governors. But so I think it makes sense. As I said, I don't want to overreact, and you'll find the word throughout memos over the past decade in the NBA. But I'm sensitive to it, and I think to the extent teams are moving away from the term, we'll stick with using governor.
Have you had positive feedback from some of the players and whatnot from this?
Yeah, players have gone both ways. I think a few players have actually spoken out and saying the greatest thing that ever happened was when Michael Jordan was able to call himself an owner. But of course, Draymond Green has been very public about the fact that we should be moving away from the term, and I completely respect that.
That was Adam Silver via TMZ. We've said team owners forever. I know that phrases are changing and diction and terminology is changing all the time as we become more aware of what offends people and what bothers people and what doesn't. Man, I can't have this one register for me, and there are certainly people bothered by it.
It'll never be enough, right? What's the next word or bit of language that's out of bounds?
Well, we talked on the show last year about a school that was no longer using the term freshman because they didn't like that the word man was in freshman.
Fresh person or whatever.
So they were
say.
Calling it freshies or whatever
first
they were
year,
doing.
First year, I don't know. No homecoming king or
mankind
queen.
Mankind is a word that no longer people, you know, all acknowledge.
Yeah, there's a subset of the population that updates what's acceptable language every day. I don't know where the rules get written, but they do. And if you're out of bounds from that, then you're automatically a racist, a bigot, a misogynist, not, you know, up to date or current. The word owner is a perfectly reasonable word, by the way. It's got a dictionary definition that stood the test of time for hundreds of years, and because there's one terrible, admittedly awful connotation in the various, I guess, elements of ownership, where people have been owned, so therefore we can never use the word again.
It's not to beat around the bush. Here is my speculation, and I hope I'm not in any way overstepping my bounds. But my guess is this is something where this is generally these old white men and these black players,
of
right?
Of course, that's exactly.
And the
what it
thought is.
Is,
an owner doesn't own me, as in historical terms may have been the case, which is tragic and awful and devastating.
The worst thing about our country's history, yes.
But I also think at some point common sense could prevail here, and nobody's saying that the owner of the Warriors owns Draymond Green as a human being. He owns the rights to that player because it's his company, just like we're at a golf course right now. And if I don't know enough about this lovely place, the International Country Club, but if it's privately owned, as I assume that it is, someone owns it. They are an owner. We don't call them the governor. That's not really a term that we use.
Yeah, and again, there are a million and one positive connotations to ownership, whether it's home ownership, whether it's small business ownership. This is something to be proud of. As Silver pointed out, one of the great moments was Michael Jordan being able to be among the fraternities of ownership, or Robert Johnson, or you know, so many others in history. This is overwrought. This is unnecessary. This is picking a battle that didn't need to be fought. Who are we arguing against? Are we arguing against slavery? No pro-slavery people anywhere. Nope. Nobody's pro at this point. Everybody's firmly entrenched that was wrong. It's been wrong. It'll continue to be wrong. It's wrong right now. If you find someone that is pro that, they're not at the table. They don't get to have the discussion with the rest of us, okay?
A normal thinking adult who will allow to be in the conversation.
Now, if you want to start restricting players' free agency, deciding that they can't play certain places, you want to limit their earnings and have other conversations that start to reverse the wheels of time, let's have this conversation. That's not what's going on. These players have more agency than they ever have in the history of the planet. holding teams by the huevos, deciding that, you know, I can opt out of a $21 million deal and have that be good business sense. It's amazing to me that as these players have gained so much ground and so much traction, rightfully so, because they're the ones that are selling the tickets. They're the ones that people want to see. They're the highlights. There are no ownership highlights.
But there's nothing really that different to me about whether it's Trent Williams or Alex Smith or Colt McCoy, like the players working for an owner of a company.
Of course.
So they work for Dan Snyder, who owns the Redskins. How is that different than you being working for an owner in a company that, like, say, Entercom? The David Field, I guess, is the CEO.
Yes.
I don't know who the owner would be. But in any company where there's an owner and you're an employee, nobody makes the leap to say, well, by being the owner, it means that he owns Danny Ruye. No, it doesn't.
It never but has.
As an employee, he owns your work.
Sure.
He owns.
You know,
he
contract.
Pays
there's
you a salary.
Absolutely.
You get paid what you have agreed to work for. I just don't understand in sports why we make that leap.
Because
it's very uncomfortable.
It is very uncomfortable, and it's silly, honestly, is what it is. It's, again, policing language when nobody meant that. At no time did anyone mean that that Ted Leonsis owns a player on his roster. Of course that's not the case. That those players have rights. They're collectively bargained. There's a very strong union that's done amazing work for the players to get out of the Wild West of when you used to get assigned to a team and that was it. You had no rights. They've got free agency, right? The players, again, have infinitely more than they have in the past, and that's the way the arrow should be trending, rightfully so. This is just picking a battle when there isn't one there. And you heard Silver in his comments. Like, he's basically saying, I don't want to tie myself into a knot over this thing and don't want to overreact to it, but they've moved away from it to try to appease a subsection of the population. And that subsection will never stop pushing as to what's acceptable until a line in the sand is drawn. This isn't worth the fight, honestly.
Apparently the NBA, they've been trying to rid this term from the game for a long time, but they're taking more steps to do that now.
It's just
you
silly.
Will not hear a team owners referred to as that anymore from certainly NBA officials and parties within the NBA. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Todd Dybas covers the Nats for NBC Sports Washington. Todd Dybas is going to join us at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock next. Right now, a chance for you to win tickets to see the Nats on their upcoming homestand when they get back to D.C. Thanks to our friends at PenFed Credit Union, who are taking you out to the ballpark all season long. PenFed Credit Union making it possible for you to go to Nats games. For more details, go to thefandc.com/contests. You've got to tell Alex when you call in what Nats pitcher earlier today we said immensely impressed us over the weekend and we couldn't believe how good he was.
We're stunned.
If you know the answer to that question, 800-636-1067. You're winning those Nats tickets thanks to PenFed Credit Union. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Todd Dybas is next. We'll get back into what Joe Theismann said about Dwayne Haskins. Will Dan Snyder allow Haskins to sit early in the season as we continue on the Fan?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.